When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text and high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts.
Our producer, Sean, is a big Mint Mobile guy. Here's what he had to say.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no dropped calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done. It was great.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally and cut your wireless bills to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.
Mr. Daryl Hammond, you haven't changed at all since I've seen you last. You look exactly the same, my good man.
You do too. How do we do it?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to get into that hat action you got going on. It's very good. Well, 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 if it isn't you again showing up for my podcast, or I guess I'm showing up for you is the way it works. Like, yeah, it depends. If you've liked and you've subscribed, which you should do, I show up for you every Thursday, like a little gift under the Christmas tree. But if you haven't, that means you're seeking me out, which I also feel good about. But I'd feel better if you liked and subscribed. Anyway, welcome to the podcast today. Welcome to Literally. I'm really excited to talk to Daryl Hammond. Daryl Hammond, for those of you who may not know, and I think that's probably a minority, is the king on SNL of characters. And he's done everybody you can possibly imagine, from Sean Connery to Clinton to Al Gore, Dick Cheney. I was lucky enough to do two episodes with Daryl. And he's a scientist when it comes to this, and just a hilarious, really interesting, wonderfully offbeat dude. It's going to be a good conversation. So here we go. It's good to talk to you, man. I'm psyched. I have such great memories of, I did two SNLs with you, and someone is smoking on the podcast and his name is Daryl Hammond.
That's not happening. Your eyes are deceiving you.
It could be worse. You could be juuling.
I haven't done any juuling. No. What is that?
I was going to say, it sounds like you're very unaware of juuling.
Yeah, I am. What is that?
Oh, juuling is what all the kids are doing, man. It's what the kids do. And
They pull out, it looks like a Star Trek device. It looks like like something you stick into the computer. I'm sounding like I'm 100 right now, and I'm leaning into it. I don't care.
Got it.
And you suck on it, and it's vaping, basically. It's vaping, but it's a specific brand of vaping. It looks like you're smoking on a computer cartridge of some sort.
Have you never been into vaping or even nicotine at all?
This is going to come as a shock, I'm sure. In the 80s, when I was a proponent of almost anything I could put in my body, smoking was the last domino to fall. Like it started with like Amstel Light with Lorne under the bleachers. And then it would, we'd part our ways, and then it would become, I'd have to find other substances, and then I would smoke. And then I got sober, and smoking had no appeal to me until I did a filmed play with Dame Maggie Smith and Natasha Richardson and Sir Richard Eyre. It was all very fancy, of course, and they're very fancy actors, and they smoke like chimneys.
Mm.
And I started doing it during rehearsal, and I came back afterwards to the States. We were in London. Everybody smoked in London then. And I have a vivid memory of going and buying my first pack of cigarettes, because usually it was like bumming from people because I wasn't, quote unquote, a smoker. And I had this moment of clarity where it was like, if you smoke this cigarette, you're a smoker.
Mm.
And I put it down, and I have never smoked a cigarette since.
It's so interesting. You've been in the thick of the most stressful business in the whole world and managed to avoid a cave-in like a couple of us had, and stayed so friggin' fit. If you don't mind my saying so, you are a fit guy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And quite an impressionist.
Well, listen, this is the deep dive I've been so excited to get into with you, because all of your impressions are great, obviously. But I had the good fortune of being there at the genesis of one of your greatest moments, which would have to be Al Gore's continual use of the term lockbox.
You were there that night?
So I was there. And one of the greatest things I've ever been able to experience was watching a presidential debate with the writing staff of Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And them go, oh, that's great. That's a great moment. Oh, that's amazing. That's great. And so this debate was the debate where Gore kept making a meal out of the notion that funds would be put in a place where they could only be used for what they were designated for. And he kept calling it a lockbox.
Yes.
And he kept talking about the lockbox. It would be put in a lockbox. And we're like, we get it. It's going in a lockbox. We established that, Al. Thank you. And so in the debate, you were very funny with lockbox. And your Gore has always been genius. What?
I'm trying to remember it. How does it go? let's see. How does the Gore thing go? In my plan, is that right?
That's it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
She tells me that. Well, listen.
Well,
I studied him. I studied all five. Like I studied the way he yells, the way he might talk when he's talking on the pillow talk to someone, and then I tried to encapsulate. All the ways that he would sound. But the main thing that happened was Jim Downey wrote this brilliant debate sketch, which had me doing the Huckleberry Hound approach to Al Gore. You know?
The Huckleberry Hound Al Gore. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah. But that's some of the most brilliant. Those words were insanely fucking funny, man.
So fun. I mean, for those of you out there, so Jim Downey is one of the great writers on the original SNL. He was there in year one, and he comes back only for politics now, which is always when SNL's at its best in a political year. And the debate stuff is just, I mean, you can, I can remember them, from Dukakis on, it was just, you know, so good. But the Gore thing is one of my favorite series again, because it's so, I'll know what it is. So
good. You can do it exactly. I know you can.
Well,
I was telling one of my agents about your ability, your transformative abilities, which are considerable. Do you remember doing Storm Phillips?
I do.
Yeah.
You were there for old Storm Phillips. Remember when Storm Phillips was on NBC? You couldn't get him off your television. It was like he was like a Dick Wolf franchise. He just would not go away on NBC.
Yeah. And you were doing Storm Phillips, and he was doing a feature on Trump. They were interviewing me about what I thought, quote unquote, Trump brain or Trump vision was. And then you were there and you like started talking like Storm Phillips, and people just fell out, because who knew that someone could do Storm Phillips?
Well, that's what what I like when people do, and I love when people do the sort of, you know, Mount Rushmore of people that you want to do, presidents and famous people. But when you hear an impersonation of someone you've never heard impersonated before, and you're like, fucking A, that's so right. That makes me laugh. And so Storm Phillips, how did Storm used to talk? And for me, when I do something, it's predicated on a move they have. Mm-hmm. As opposed to going, I want to imitate them. Like,
precisely.
Storm Phillips' incredibly wooden promos were what made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I remember doing coming up next, the trampoline, children's play toy, or backyard death trap. And
oh, man.
That was literally the joke of it. And I remember, I think Will Ferrell played the stage managers. Okay, we're going to do this a little bit. We're going to try to get through the promos a little bit faster. And then, the trampoline, children's death toy, or blackout play type. Just that's.
Oh, man, that's good work. It's good stuff. I was doing this play about my book, you know, this book that I wrote, and
yeah, the title's great. Remind me of the title. If there is no God, what?
God, if you're not up there, I'm fucked. God, if you're not up there, I'm fucked is the title.
I don't know why Siri is trying to interrupt my interview right now. It's going. I didn't get that. Hey Siri, go away. That was amazing. She literally said, okay, and went away.
No.
She did. By the way, can I just say something? If there's anybody listening to this podcast who works for whoever makes Siri, I don't appreciate the attitude. It's like, who put it into the algorithm? Like, well, I will, and I don't want to say it right now because it'll come up on my screen somehow. But if you ask for her to appear, she'll literally go,
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell? Like, if you had somebody who worked for you and you asked them, hey, could you step into the office, or could we have a meeting or whatever? It'd be an issue, don't you think?
Yeah, and I mean, really, who on God's green earth would ever think that Siri would have a tood?
I don't understand it.
Siri's got a tood, man.
Maybe. It's like, if the whole point is having a robot, like, supplicant, whatever. Yes. Sure. Wouldn't you really want it to go the whole route?
Yes. It should stand deferentially apart at all times. Yes, sir. No, sir. Thank you, sir. Of course,
yeah,
sir.
Ma'am. Any of it. It's not sexist. And by the way, there are... I'm surprised. Like, if I were running it, I would have you do the voice of Siri.
I don't know. I can't do... I don't think I can do women.
So you can get men. You have men's... Siri has a men option, too. You can get like a French guy, I think. We can imagine what he'd be like. Can you imagine like just like a totally disinterested, like if a totally disinterested Frenchman as Siri would really, if you're going to, she's back. Hey Siri. And now she's on my screen taking down what I'm saying. She's transcribing this interview. See, t- tech is all fucked up. I mean, there's stuff going on now. The robots are going to come get us, Daryl.
Yeah, in a French dialect. That, I mean, that's a comedy bit in the waiting right there.
I know. See, I would have loved to have had your job. I really would have. Not kidding. It's the dream job, being at SNL, sitting around pizza at 5 in the morning going, what if Siri were a French guy with attitude?
Yeah.
And they pay you.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit more to being on SNL than that, but it's probably a little bit more that goes into it. Like the 20 years you spent prepping to get there. And
what was your, I ask everybody who I talked to who was on SNL, what was your audition?
It took place in Studio 8H. It was me and Lauren and a camera person only in the studio. And I had the distinct impression that maybe he had to be talked into letting me come out there. I'm not sure he was fully sold on the idea of me auditioning or that I had anything for him. But, you know,
What gave you that idea? The fact that he was asleep during the audition?
Because, you know, the disinterest for the first, you know, the sort of brushing off the shoulder.
That's not a good move. Not a good sign.
The fatal.
Oh, no.
And you're like, and I remember saying to myself, okay, so I know I'm not going to get the show, so I'm going to just please God, since this is my last time that I'll be in this sphere, in this hemisphere, let me do a good audition. Let me perform as well as I want to. And I did. I performed as well as I wanted to, but somewhere around minute 7, I checked down to see just how bored he might be now. And he had that hawk eye on me. Mm. Like he saw something that he knew, that he recognized. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The Lorne Hawkeye. Yes. Who doesn't remember that?
And I thought, Jesus, God, Christ.
You know, I don't know if what Daryl has is the right thing, but it's our thing.
That's very funny. You can do the line. I can't do Lauren, but...
You can't or you won't.
Perhaps I won't.
Perhaps you won't.
Maybe it's because I know on what side my bread is buttered.
You know, the thing about Daryl is he doesn't really eat bread, but he knows what side it's buttered.
Yes, there you go. So, like, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, Trump tweeted about something about me. Complimentary to me, you know... Not so complimentary to others and him. And I was standing in the hall and I remember thinking to myself, you know, it really didn't do me any fucking favors to be tweeted about by the president of the United States. Okay.
That should be a good thing. We should live in a world where you're like, hey, how great is this for me?
Not. Yeah. And I was like, man,
I don't know if you know this. People in show business love Donald Trump. They love him.
Oh, my God.
They just love him.
I was standing in 8H the next day and right before the entrance to the theater, and Lauren was about to whisk by with the 3 or 4 smart looking, you know, assistants from Harvard and Yale and clipboard in hand. And he walks past me and you can tell me that he says the line, "The president of the United States knows your name." Oh, and then he kept going. Best. And I fell out. I was like, didn't make me too happy to see that up there. But anyway, you know, you're there, Rob. You know what it's like to stand there and a llama walks by and there's Hillary Clinton. And hey, ain't that Cam Newton? You know,
that's right. Yeah. I found myself doing a sketch with Ralph Nader. I mean, you just don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it is one of the great places in the world where it's like Noah's Ark. There's two of everything. It's like, you never know what animal is going to be, you know. Studio H is the arc. Did you ever have Gore? Well, I'm sure you had the people that you've done the impersonations with the actual people, which is now it's become sort of a thing on SNL. It's like I kind of am over it. It's like, I get it. There's this somebody doing Kamala Harris with Kamala Harris. I get it. It feels like it's overworked to me. But when you were there in an era where that was fresh and interesting, who was the first person you did that you had to face down that you did?
I mean, it seems to me one of the first people that I had to face down was Phil Donahue, like doing Phil Donahue for Phil Donahue. There was Clinton, you know, I did a couple of banquets with him. I did a thing with Cheney, in which at Cheney's request, he had me dress up like Clinton and come and literally break balls of his Republican counterparts, because Cheney was a really good, really good laugher. He loved to laugh. And he
could amazing.
Take
amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? See, that's the stuff that people just don't ever, you would never think. You know who's a great laugher, just a great guy who gets it and is hilarious, loves a good joke? Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't think that, but he I distinctly remember there was one joke I told about Gore at a White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I heard Cheney's hand laughing. It's pretty
really?
Special. Pretty great moment.
White House Correspondents' Dinners, do you think they'll come back?
I don't know what in the world is going to come back.
I mean, it's the White House Correspondents' Dinner were always such a weird thing because show business people think powerful politicians are stars. And powerful politicians think show business people are stars. And it's this weird mutual admiration society. And again, you get the weirdest groups of people together at that. I think I've been to two of them, but then the president speaks, and it's always usually until Trump stopped doing it. It was always such a great time to see that a president be legitimately funny and show that they got the joke, which I loved. I loved seeing that, regardless of how you felt about them. You're like, oh, they get it. They're funny.
Yeah, we were all very pleased by what went on during the night. No one could really say that this benefited our country actually in any way, but it was a damn good time.
And you crushed. And because some people recently have bombed horrendously.
Yeah.
And the reason they bomb is because they have a partisan agenda one way or the other. And one of the great things about the night when that's what it is. 100% that's what it is. By the way, you can be as mean as you want. I've seen people be so mean to the president. He's right there. Just so mean. And the president loving it. But that's when it's clearly a joke. It's kind of like being roasted when I did a Comedy Central roast. When you know at the end of the day that the people there love you, then the meaner they are, the better it is. But if you also know they're being mean because they fucking hate you, that's a whole different vibe.
Yeah, but that's you make a really good point. That's the last room in the world where you want to walk out there and not include half the political world.
Right.
Like, I got some jokes that are going to make Cheney laugh, but they're probably not going to make, the Clintons laugh. But I always tried to do it that I would find something funny-ish that they did, i.e., with Bob Hope, it was Ike's golf swing, with Cheney, I made him into sort of this wise cracking tough guy that was a little, maybe, a little over the top when it came to manners,
What's your process when hey, Daryl, you've seen in the headlines, so-and-so did a such-and-such, and we want to do something about them in the show.
And
you
got to
go or anytime. What's your process for figuring out how to do somebody? Or now, are there people that you were like, I just can't crack this code?
That's happened a number of times, but I never told that to Lauren until the last minute when I would say, I just can't get this. I mean, the thing about trying to learn a character over there is you're on the clock. You know this. You know what it's like. You've been there. You're on the clock. You got to get this in said number of hours, or let's say it's Thursday, so you need this by Saturday, but that's not all you're going to be doing Thursday and Friday. You're going to do about six other things each day. So really, you're going to get 3 or 4 hours to bring something out there on stage. It's not always enough time, and it wasn't for me.
I had to do They wanted me to do Al Michaels. We did, and the sketch ended up being on, and I think they wisely gave Al Michaels to somebody else. But I remember just, you know, looking at video and video and video and listening and video and trying to come up with something. And same with the cult leader Marshall Applewhite, who had all of his followers kill each other in San Diego, and then they all wore Nikes. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And I had to play Marshall Applewhite. By the way, that's when you know you made it in show business. You're like, you're playing the dead cult leader murderer, Marshall Applewhite, on the cold open of Saturday Night Live. You're like, yes, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Who do you remember who you couldn't do?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't do Newt Gingrich. I couldn't do Danny Aiello. I couldn't do Nick Nolte. I couldn't do Nick Nolte. I'm sorry.
Wait a minute. I do a fucking Nick Nolte. You couldn't do a Nick Nolte?
No, I couldn't do it. Couldn't do
come
Jackie.
Come on.
No. Come on. Let's go. Let me see.
Dude. First of all, I grew up in Point Doom, and Nick was always, well, I'm going to say it, staggering around Malibu. And
What age was he at that time?
This was, I would say it was post Cannery Row. Mm-hmm. So we're going to say mid 80s, pre romantic leading man resurgence, Prince of Tides.
Oh, okay.
I love Trouble. Mm-hmm. Pre that moment. And I remember walking into the, probably to get some beer with one of the Sheens, and seeing Nick. And Nick was like, "How's your dad?" And they were like, "Oh, he's actually down in Nicaragua." And I remember Nick Nolte going, "Nicaragua, Nicaragua, Nicaragua," and backing up and falling over into a can of beans and everything falling all over the floor, a display. So whenever anybody says Nick Nolte, I go Nicaragua.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Where else can you go surfing and skiing in the same day? Or check out a world-class art museum and camp out under a brilliant night sky same day? Or hike through the redwoods and get a luxury spa treatment? There's only one answer: California. No matter where you go across this state, you will find a way to play. I love California, and I have not yet surfed and skied in the same day, although I do both. So that is on my bucket list. It's the most beautiful place in the world. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today.
Thanks to Quince, I can get high-end, versatile pieces at fantastic prices. They've got killer luxury essentials that are perfect for my wardrobe. Quince has all the must-haves, like Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweaters from $50, iconic 100% leather jackets, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of middlemen and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. One of my producers tried Quince, and here's what he had to say.
I'm really excited to revamp my closet with Quince. There are so many great options at pretty unbeatable prices. I'm really excited to try out the burgundy cashmere crew neck. I love the blue chore jacket. Maybe I'll throw some joggers in there. These are great options at pretty unbeatable prices.
Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/rob for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince, quince.com/rob to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rob.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast.
you get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I have developed a Bill Clinton over the years, and
yeah.
I actually was invited to the Clinton offices up in Harlem right when they first opened them. And I was like, it's sort of like I used to do this in Lauren's office. He never knew this. Like I would, when the staff was there, I would go into the area where they put the cards up for the show and go, Anna Gasteyer is a little light. Can we do maybe move her into something? Maybe post update and eat the popcorn while I did it. And the staff would fucking lose it. And then Lauren would come in and I'd just sit there. So I did the same thing at the Clinton Library. I was there going, I have to say these hallways are not quite as heated as I would have thought. And everybody, and then the big fella starts walking down the hallway and then I shut the fuck up and get scared that maybe he heard it.
Mm. So I was going to tell you, I did a play at La Jolla Playhouse called The Daryl Hammond Project, right? Directed by Chris Ashley, the Tony Award winning director. And I played a lot of parts in there. And I told them, Rob Lowe can do this. He could do this one man show because I can't do it. It's just too funky for me. But you there's 63 parts and I know you could do it.
This sounds great. I want to read this. Send this to me.
Seriously? Okay.
Yeah. And if I were to do it, I would not change it to the Rob Lowe Project either. It would be the Daryl Hammond Project.
The problem, well, thank you. I mean, you're playing a cutter at SNL. I mean, how bad can it be? It's got a couple of good moments, right?
Right.
But it's really hard because you've got to be able to transform. You got to play three or four doctors. You got to do Clinton is the main one. You got to do Sean Connery, which I know you can do.
Yeah, I can do. We figured out Sean Connery.
Oh, fuck yeah. You really got that in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But I will have someone send it to you.
I would love. Are you kidding me? I want Al Gore in there. That's my favorite.
Well, there's a scene in the middle of the play where there's a master class where you do your audition for Lauren. So you get to peel off whatever your 20 favorite ones are, you know, in the middle of the show.
I did Eric Roberts on, and that's another one. It's like, the more obscure, the more I like them. I like people doing really obscure. Like,
yeah, but gourmet people know Eric Roberts is nice. That's not it.
And Walken, Chris Walken's another one, but everybody does Chris Walken, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Obviously now, Alec is doing Trump, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about this?
Oh, we're just elated. That's how we feel.
We're elated.
Well, listen, can't win them all, right, brother?
You can't win them all. And here's the thing. Can I just say this? And I love Alec. I've had him on the podcast. I've known him forever. I think his Trump is fucking unbelievable. It's like Tina's Sarah Palin for me in that, like, when I look at them, I actually think I might be looking at them. There's something about it's all morphed. But I don't love the new thing of bringing in top hitting celebrities to do what the cast should be doing. I don't love it. Mm. Don't love it.
What do you suppose that's about?
I wonder. Let me think for a minute. Ratings. Oh, that came up. I got it. That's what it was. It took me a minute. Think of it. It's like, I don't know why. I mean, if it were a one-off, I would get it. But the cast are so great. I want to see them do it.
I mean, it was explained to me they were sort of moving in that direction. Weird time to be alive. Weird time to be in show business. Yeah.
But look at it this way. It's the other thing is that, you know, Lorne's a genius. Nobody else could have kept that show going as long as he have. And this might be the iteration that has it go for another 20 years.
True that.
You know?
Yeah.
What is your Trump predicated on? What's the basis of it?
I don't know. I haven't done it in so long.
You're on strike.
No, I don't have anywhere to do it. Where would I do it?
You right here.
It's been a while. But I know that it's based on Trump's brain doesn't allow
much
certain negativities to seep in. It's almost like it's almost like solipsism, you know, where he's the only thing that's real to him ends up being his own appetites, his own desires, his own vision. So that when he comes out there and says something that the Washington Post tells you the next day is untrue, he believes it.
Of course.
He believes it. So he's not just a con man that's up there making shit up to try to fake you out. At the time, he believes it because, I've said this to a lot of people, and it's kind of a cop-out, but it's not. It's the truth. I never really, of all the people I studied, I never studied anyone like him.
It's kind of like when they used to have ads for movies and papers, and they would take reviews, and they would take three lines of the review, but not the other three lines. And then, so I think that's sort of what he does. It's not, I think he just sort of cherry picks. Everything's a review. By the way, that is true. Everything is a review to him. Everything.
Well, so far as I can tell, his main thing each time he speaks is to engage his base and throw them a little red meat. And the red meat is sort of like, look, you were fucked. I know you were fucked. Okay, we all know you were fucked. And I was fucked too. And we were all fucked. And then they can start screaming. And then after that, he just goes into word salads and distortion fields, you know, but I've studied him a fair amount.
I think word salads and distortion fields might be the title of this particular podcast episode.
I think so. I was watching All the King's Men, a movie from the 40s starring Broderick Crawford. There was a line in the movie, in which the Willie Stark character played by Broderick Crawford says, "It's not me they're after. It's you. I'm just in their way." And it blew my mind because Trump says that. Trump actually has a meme online that is pure because Willie Stark in real life was Huey Long. Huey Long was right. the guy back in those days that no one could figure out if he was from heaven or from hell. Right. Doing goods for lots of people. But oh, my God, what a bad guy. But isn't it interesting that he's doing a line from Huey Long?
Well, that's his era, the 40s, which makes sense. We're all of us are stuck in what was cool when we were 20.
Right.
I mean, you think about it. It really is true. It's like the thing I'm most scared about getting older is that my references when I speak are so dated. that seems so gross because we all know that. We all know people are like, that's just like something Benny Goodman would have played or whatever. You're like, what the fuck? Ugh. And I don't want to be that guy, but I already find myself being that guy because if you like reference the Rolling Stones, it's like people look at you like, what the fucking the Rolling Stones? Let's talk about, you know, The Weeknd or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck, you're just fucked.
Richard Lewis used to have a joke similar to that. He'd be like, back in the 50s, Adlai Stevenson, I met Madonna, you know.
He's a funny fuck. God, I got to get him on the show. That's a great, make a note of that. Richard Lewis is a funny, funny man.
Holy shit, he's funny.
Adlai Stevenson, I met Madonna.
Sorry, I met Madonna, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's so.
Got a belly laugh out of you.
It did.
It's a funny dude.
Oh, you replaced Don Pardo.
Yeah.
So Don Pardo was the great announcer of Live from New York. He had that great. Did you do Don or did you do yourself?
Well, I did Don a few times while he was still alive when he had laryngitis. So when he did pass and Don and I were, I think I was sort of a favorite of his. Mm. He was a favorite of mine. So I get this call that I'm living in New Orleans at the time. I get this call from Lauren's office and Higgins is involved. And it probably was Higgins that called me and said, we want you to do Don Pardo, but not Don Pardo. We want it to somehow be an homage to him. We don't want to hire an announcer to replace him. So what we want is to figure out a way that he's still slightly, you know, he's still in it. So what we decided to do was, color certain vowels. You know, people's sound, we don't hear it in their consonants. All our consonants sound the same, male or female. They all sound the same. But in the E's and the I's and the U's, so each time that we announced a broadcast, we would pick like featuring. You know, the rest of the time I'm doing like this standard announcer voice, right? But right. Then we would get to featuring musical guest. Yeah, so
Randy Newman.
Yeah, so Don is still there in the vowels.
See, that's I love hearing the you know how you make it happen stuff. It was all the vowels, and I learned. Here's what I learned today: that men and women's consonants all sound the same.
Yeah.
And the other thing I like is when you put something in an impersonation that the person actually doesn't do, but you feel like they should do it.
Well, with Clinton, he never went. I never saw him do that. Thumb and the thumb.
But yeah. When he bites the biting the lip and then the thing yeah, where you.
I did it once at the cellar. It exploded the room. I've seen him bite his lip.
Yes.
And I've seen him give a thumbs up, but never at the same time, you know? But I'm not sure that's what you mean.
No, it is what it's exactly what I mean. It's like when I did young Robert Wagner in the Austin Powers movies.
You fuck, you're great. Young Robert Wagner, who the hell?
Well, and it was based on him knowing the names of all the maitre d's in Los Angeles at all the restaurants and That was the key for me. That's how I found it. It was like, do you know Gigi at the Palm?
Yeah.
And then it was him putting the wrong emphasis on syllables, which he doesn't do. But I do when I play him in Austin Powers. So if he was talking about the island of Fiji, he goes, I'm going to the island of Fiji.
But why does that work so well?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
Wow.
Do you know? My hand got bitten by that mini me. As opposed to mini me. So it's just like putting the wrong emphasis on shit.
But you put that in there. It reminds me of something I read by Uta Hagen when she's coaching. And she talked about it's not the character. It's you as that character. So that's what you just did. You put in. You put it in. It's not him, but it's him.
It just kind of works. It's kind of what you want him to be. I don't know. You want
it.
It's like a fantasy of somebody. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like you're using your body to depict something that's unseen about the guy.
There's a great debate thing. Maybe you did it. Remember the debate? They used to have the format where you could wander around the stage. What do they call it? It's not a town hall. Maybe it is a town hall. But there was basically no podium and they could wander. Yeah, it was town hall because they could wander up to the audience and take questions. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And so there's that great moment where Bush is talking and all of a sudden Gore is just looming right over him. Do you remember that moment?
Yeah.
And Bush turns around and looks at him and goes like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then goes right back to the answer. And Gore kind of just like shrinks. Hey.
And what was that? That was
I tell you exactly what it was. Here's what I heard. I heard that Rob Reiner, you know, who's big Democratic activist and director, was like, get in his face. Get in his space. Make him uncomfortable. You know, get right up in there. And Gore was like, like an actor who doesn't really understand direction. You know, like we've all worked with people like that who just, he literally ran across the stage and stood right next to him. And that was the, what I heard was the impetus of that great classic debate moment.
But it was almost like playground violence where you walk up behind a kid for no fucking reason. The kid's like, what?
That's what it was. It's exactly what it was.
And you walk over and go, I'm stronger than you and I can take your shit.
Have you ever heard this? That the person who wins an election is the person you can picture outside. You ever heard that one?
The person who wins the election is the person you can picture outside.
Most picture outside. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. But if you think about it, it's true. Think about it. Like, think about everybody who's won and lost an election. And there's always one of them that you can more picture outside.
Right. Tossing a Frisbee, maybe.
I think it goes back to Kennedy. It's like one of them seems like they're stuck behind a desk and the other one is like out in the sun and vital and, you know, Reagan on the horse, the cowboy hat or whatever. Think, when you really think about it.
Reagan chopping wood.
Yep. Michael Dukakis goes outside, gets in the tank, and that's the end of that. John Kerry goes outside and windsurfs the wrong way, and that's the end of that. I mean, when you really think about it, it might be something to it. By the way, there may be nothing to it, and that's why I'm not a political strategist.
I think we see Obama shooting baskets.
Oh, yeah. Golfing, body surfing.
Yeah.
I love that. That's my favorite Obama picture ever, is him body surfing.
Yeah. Clinton, lots of jogging. And Bush was a great runner, too, I believe.
Yeah. Bush Sr. By the way, the great irony is there's no bigger outdoorsman than Bush Sr. But.
Right. Skydiver.
He doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it.
No.
No. He doesn't look like a guy who jumped out of a flaming airplane onto the wing, parachuted into the Pacific Ocean on a life raft, and survived. He did it. That's Bush Sr.
Yeah. And yet,
when you look at him, you think, dweeb.
Right. Remember when Dana was doing it and he would be going, here's something I'd love to hear your thoughts on. Because I did this with Gore a couple of times too. And you did it with Robert Wagner. But when Dana's going, not going to do it.
Not gonna.
This
is so good.
Come on.
Well, Dana's thing is he just reduced it to the most ridiculous essence. Like, it's like you distill it and you distill it and you distill it and you distill it until it's like a bouillon cube of ridiculousness.
Yes, and anyone that saw that would know that was Bush Sr., also knowing in their mind that Bush Sr. doesn't sound like that.
He's never said, nah, ganda. I don't think he ever said it.
I can't.
Did he ever say Naganda?
Naganda.
and yet everybody in the world goes, oh, that's President Bush.
Yeah.
What?
Oh my God. He really has that guy down pat.
And we'll be right back after this.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first.
Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here. My travel series, Conan O'Brien Must Go, is premiering on Max on April 18th. This is a show that kind of grew out of the podcast, as you guys know.
Yeah.
And I traveled to Norway, Argentina, Thailand, and Ireland to meet some of my fans that I met through the podcast. I have a lot of adventures. I've become a gaucho, a Muay Thai kickboxer. I'm an old lighthouse keeper. I'm a soccer player. I even visit my ancestral town in Ireland. Hmm. They've asked me never to return. You might even see a certain associate producer in my travels. You don't want to miss it. I love saying that when you might be fine with missing it, but I think you'll like it. Watch Conan O'Brien Must Go, available to watch now on Max.
Who was your favorite impressionist when you were coming up? Were you a Rich Little guy?
Yeah, I mean, I liked all of those guys, and I still really greatly, you know, like, admire their work. But, you know, Eddie Murphy was the guy that gave me the idea, like, hey, do the impression and be funny.
Mm.
Be funny. First and foremost, be funny.
Right.
That inspired me to change everything that I did and do a lot of what Dana was so great at was just slightly, slightly exaggerating, slightly. Like, I have pictures of these paintings of people. I'll show you a couple of them right now. I used to keep these in my office at work. This picture, can you see this?
Yes. Why a duck? That's the Marx Brothers.
It's the Marx Brothers, but who's the artist?
It's Hirschfeld.
Hirschfeld.
Hirschfeld? Yeah, Hirschfeld.
I would keep these in there to remind me of what I'm really trying to do at Saturday Night Live. I'm trying to do the
caricature
person. Caricature. Because you know how it is, Rob. When you get a script that you haven't seen before, and there's 30 seconds of material that's going to go out in front of the audience in just a couple of minutes, you need to be able to jump on that bitch and not get too fucking particular about it. Because you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you got to go out there and fucking be loaded for bear and take your chances with it. Did you like the Hirschfeld analogy?
I love the Hirschfeld analogy. I'm actually looking at a Hirschfeld of the West Wing cast.
Yeah.
And believe me, I do not like the caricature of myself. Don't like it.
Really? Why not?
It's nothing but jawline.
Worst things could happen, Rob.
I've been reduced to a human delivery system for a jaw.
I need to see that.
And you know the thing that he always hid his daughter's name in his paintings? You know that
Nina, was it?
The Nina. Yeah, you'd find the Ninas and try to.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you asked me something earlier, like, where do I start? You know, the first thing that I start with is, because we're on the clock, have I done someone like this before?
Mm-hmm.
Have I tonally, for instance, Robert Wagner and Stone Phillips are about 1/1,000th of an inch away from each other on the vocal.
True.
If you were playing them on a violin.
Yeah.
You're about 1/1,000th of an inch. The notes are. I had that with Koppel and Donahue, but that's where I start. Where do you start?
I'm not as good as it in anywhere near. It's just an instinctual thing. And what I learned from Dana, and when I asked him about this, is like you're saying, is more of the technical, like, where in the throat is it? You know, is it more nasal, like the notes, the actual physical, where is it on the fretboard of the guitar? When I was doing Behind the Candelabra, I had this character that was really looked very like pulled and almost feminine, but a lot of people were playing very fey in the movie, and I didn't want to be the same. So I gave him like a voice of like, it was the guy from the Men's Warehouse commercials. I don't know if you remember that guy. I don't know if they had them in the East Coast. You're going to like the way you look. It was that.
And we guarantee it.
I guarantee it.
I guarantee it.
So I figured, like, what I figured I wanted a voice that was, it was literally the men's. I just fucking did that voice. I didn't even, I was like, well, I'm just going to do that voice. And, you know, so sometimes you just pick something that you hear, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course. You've got an ear, kid.
I literally only have one. I wonder if that has something to do with it. I'm deaf in one ear. I've been deaf. I've always been deaf in one ear. And people say you have, I have, when they say you have an ear, I go, literally, I have an ear.
Yeah, my mother swore that I was hard of hearing in one ear in this
ear.
Really? Yeah. That I every time I'm listening to something to comprehend it, I come out of this ear. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Same. I get the head tilt thing going.
Yeah.
You got to tell me this story about when you worked in Hell's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, it was a hotel full of really gnarly, fucking badass dudes.
Yeah.
And you used to regale them with, was it Porky Pig having sex with Elmer Fudd?
It was Popeye having sex with olive oil. And they were called the Westies. They were said to be the most violent gang in the history of New York.
Yeah. Wait. The Westies were the guys you were entertaining?
Yeah.
The most violent gang ever.
Yeah.
And you were entertaining them?
Yeah. I mean, the two main guys were I think, in jail during my two-year stint or so. But I understood everyone there, and I recognized some of the names. They were the Westies. And I would do Rodney Dangerfield for them.
Well, anyway, this is at a hotel.
Skyline Motor Inn on 10th Avenue and 48th. Yeah. And I would do Rodney Dangerfield in Spanish for them.
Well,
yeah.
I got to hear that. Give me, first of all, if I don't ask you to do Popeye having sex with olive oil on this podcast, I've failed my fiduciary. The advertisers should fire me. Everybody should fire me. Everybody.
Listen, if I do Popeye having sex with olive oil, will you do my podcast, Rob?
Of course. I'm in.
Come on. Because I want to talk to you some more about what you're talking about, Trump.
Yeah.
Bob, all right, here we go. I'm hiking up my skirt. Here we go.
Show me some leg.
This is really awful. Please forgive me, God. Okay. All right. It's like, oh, look at the little baby there. It's horrible. Don't tell anyone. Did you say a word to anybody? Come on, olive oil. It's horrible.
The Westies loved it.
Yeah, they laughed. They liked the Rodney.
Do you think they ever killed somebody and then looked over at each other and went,
I did catch a rising star, and there were some people from the bar that came. I don't know that they were either, any of them were Westies that night, but there were just some people from the bar that came, and I did the olive oil at the catch rising star, and it was just horrible. Just a horrible, horrible thing to happen to me.
Oh, God. Do you remember your biggest bomb moment?
Because
I do. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I know that anybody who's successful has had a moment where they flamed out beyond belief.
Yeah.
If you haven't done that, then you're not in the game.
Yeah.
It's like if you haven't been blindsided, then you're not playing in the NFL.
Yeah. If you haven't gone concussive, then you haven't,
that's right,
haven't been in the league for very long.
If they haven't taken you into the concussion tent, you're not in show business.
That's right. I mean, I bombed. I got booed off stage a few times.
Booed off stage. That's a real thing.
Well,
it sounds unimaginable.
Okay. Well, listen, Booker's book. That guy's pretty funny. Here's another show I need a comic for. Just put those two together. The first time this happened was like Boy Scouts of America in Daytona. They paid me $5,000. The average age was 10, 11, 12 years old, and their parents. And we were warned, do not curse. Okay? Parents and their children. And I said, God damn, pretty early in my set, they started to boo. And they wouldn't stop booing, and I had to leave the stage. And of course, the mother kind of insists on it. Now, flash forward to 3 years ago, I'm doing a show at one of the big hotels here in New York. And by now, I played the White House and a couple of other swanky joints, all right?
Yeah, exactly.
Some good fucking gigs. So I'm getting ready to go back out on stage, and I'm going to do 50 minutes. And before I go out there, I say, hey, listen, when am I going on? This is, I thought it was 10 minutes ago. She said, well, they haven't finished praying yet. I was like, excuse me? They're praying. And I said, they're a prayer group? Is this a religious organization? And in fact, there's a chain of restaurants in the South that is a religious organization. And I said, do you know I'm from Saturday Night Live? Do you know what I talk about?
What I talk about?
My Sean Connery, my Clinton stuff, right? And I said, oh, and by the way, I do a show for adults, right? And she goes, well, there aren't that many children out there. I said, wait a second. You say they are children with their religious parents. I come out the Bill Clinton guy, and the booze started almost immediately. Like, it was just a bad booking.
It's just a bad booking.
But I suffered the horror of it, and I had to give them their money back. I mean,
what? Rob,
oh, yeah. Rob, you're 40 minutes into your set, man. You haven't heard no laughs, no sounds, no nothing. But you've got to pretend like you just got to keep performing the thing. And then at the end of it, they made me give the money back.
The ultimate indignity.
That's a pretty bad one.
That's a bad one. I just love hearing those stories. I love it.
I did a job at conversely in the Bronx. Everyone said everyone there was mobbed up, and they had a buffet line after. And the guy comes up with a folded up 20, and he hands this to me, and he goes, "This is for the one about the Ayatollah."
He paid per joke.
Yeah, he's like, the one about the Ayatollah. Here you go.
That would be an interesting thing to put into the, like, once we can actually get together and have audiences again, maybe you pay per, like, there should be a thing where, like, you pay per joke. Like, if the joke really kills,
you contribute.
People have to pay a little bit more. They just do. And if it's not good on the plus side for the audiences, they don't have to pay shit. But, like, oh, you and I might have just come up with a new reality, like, game show together. I'm just telling you. Mm-hmm. Pay per joke. And, like, you wear a heart monitor, and, like, that's how you know. Like, there's no – it's like if your heart goes, you're laughing. It is what it is. There's no lying, and then you got to pay.
That's amazing. You know, when Sarah Palin was hosting or co-hosting, the FBI had had this imaging equipment where you can see the brain – laughing, you can see the brain, the thermal imaging of the brain enjoying itself and also maybe preparing to kill. You know, you can see agitation. So in Rob Lowe's club, we put thermal imaging up on the screen.
Well, we find out what. Hang on.
You're like, hey, listen, you only gave me $5. I need $20 because I saw how fucking funny you thought this was.
Wait. I love developing new shit for myself as much as you can possibly imagine. But I'm more interested in you just telling me the FBI has the technology to look at your brain at Saturday Night Live to see if you're going to murder someone or laugh at a joke.
I was told that the FBI and I did not speak directly.
It's the greatest thing I've ever heard. Where do you think they put the machine? Could you make room for the FBI's machine here under the bleachers? It's some sort of machine I don't really understand.
Please let me be clear.
Don't misunderstand. It's for the FBI. No, don't misunderstand.
A few of us thought that they had that, and that's what we were talking about that night. And that it was in a briefcase or a violin case.
To me, this sounds like someone who's been up for too many days. Like, that's the hit I'm getting off this. It's like, the FBI is here. They've got a machine. It can tell if it's funny or not.
I bet you we can find out online.
Fucking get some NyQuil. Get some NyQuil in you.
I bet you we can find out online if they have that ability. It's thermal imaging. It's not. Isn't that a real thing?
Yes. It just tells you there's a human being behind that wall.
Oh.
It didn't tell you. You're in the woods at night. You put it out there. Oh, there they are. They're behind that pine tree. Yeah. That's what it does.
Yeah, it's not telling you if it likes the monologue.
You fucking idiot. Stop doing blow and get some sleep. Oh, yeah. Shit. And we reveal the FBI's new technology. I love it.
Well, I bet you there's a way to find out if they have that, because that's what I heard.
I believe it.
Because could it also detect sexual arousal? I'm saying.
I think the next thing you need to do is Popeye being thermal image. It's hot. That might be the worst Popeye anybody's ever done.
I don't think so.
I'm talking about.
Just take the kick and put it in the back of your throat. So you. All right, what?
I can tell you what, my Popeye is better than Robin Williams was. I can tell you that.
Well, I can tell you what, I think you just nailed the laugh. I always think of it as a musical note. Come on, man. You can go, you're ready to go on the road.
This is why I'll never be Joe Rogan, because I do this kind of shit on my show.
All right, this is terrible.
We've done all we can do.
You're like a movie star, and you're doing Popeye with me. Oh,
it's good. This is what I was born to do. I'm a character actor in a leading man's body.
I believe that.
I am. 100% I am.
Yeah. It sounds right.
Daryl Hammond, this is so fun. This is great. And to be continued, we got to do
and
more.
You have said you will do my podcast, correct?
Yes, I'm in. It's on the public record right now.
Fantastic.
There's nothing that can be done. I'm backed in.
Awesome. Thank you for a killer afternoon.
That's so fun. Thank you.
All righty.
I think Daryl's off the line now, so I can work on my Popeye without his hectoring. Means me back in your throat. Whatever, Daryl. I don't know. Have you had enough yet? I think you have. That was really fun, though. And thanks for listening, as always. It is time for the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line, where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hey, Rob, how you doing? Brian from Moorhead, Minnesota. Actually a fellow podcaster, so I'm loving your show. My question for you is, who would be a dream guest, someone who's no longer with us, that you would love to have had the chance to interview on your show?
Hey, Brian. Really good question. And I'm going to just go with the first name that popped into my head without editing myself. JFK. First of all, as a podcaster, you understand the voice is everything. And I'll spare you my bad JFK. No, I won't. I am actually going to try to do it. Well, Rob, that's really bad. He sounded like Bugs Bunny. I bailed on that. I bailed so fast on that JFK. Not doing it. I think he'd be great. I think JFK, he was the very first telegenetic president. I think he would be the very first podcast genetic president. Although, you know, Obama's on a podcast, so there's that. But yeah, I would like JFK. He's charismatic. He's one of my favorite presidents. Lived an amazing life. People loved him. You know, you could ask him. You could ask him who he thinks killed him. How about that? Now that would be a podcast. Thanks for the question. And I'll see you next week on Literally.
You have been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe. produced and engineered by me, Devin Torrey Bryant. Executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Stitcher. The supervising producer is Aaron Blair. Talent producer, Jennifer Samples. Please rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.